puppetconspiracy.blogspot.com.
And there will be this Monday, there'll be a presentation called Middle East and North Africa, New Hopes and New Dangers. Actually, not just a presentation, but discussion and slideshow with Phyllis Bennis of the Institute for Policy Studies and Ashraf Elkern of the Islamic Society of Greater Worcester. Again, that's this Monday, May 16th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Cambridge Friends Center, 5 Longfellow Park, near Harvard Square. Sponsored by United for Justice with Peace. There is a small donation requested, but nobody will be turned away for lack of funds.
Okay. I know there's more. Let's see. What have I not done? I'm not keeping track well.
No, I have one here.
No, because I have more than one.
All right.
Oh, yes. The Massachusetts Housing and Shelter Alliance, this is, they're an excellent group, and they're holding their 8th annual fundraising event, Home for Good, Solutions Start Here, next Wednesday, May the 18th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Boston Marriott Copley Place, featuring cocktail reception, hors d'oeuvres, and award presentations. It is a fundraiser for their fine work. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit mhsa.net, or you can call them at 617-367-6447.
And to keep immigrant families together and to stop the raids and deportations, a prayer vigil will be held for immigrant detainees this Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Suffolk County House of Correction, 20 Bradston Street in Boston. For more information, visit bostonnewsanctuary.org.
Okay, one more thing, and then we'll let the human beings come in and do their human thing, yeah? This Sunday morning at the Community Church of Boston, the Sunday Speakers Forum presents the annual Sacco and Vanzetti Social Justice Award. The Sacco and Vanzetti Award remembers the two Italian immigrants who were unjustly targeted, convicted, and sentenced to death, and honors individuals and groups working to create a more just, humane, and community-centered world. This year's honorees are Truth and Justice Radio, our sisters and brothers over there at that other radio station across town. Truth and Justice Radio has been bringing honest reporting and stories to the greater Boston area for over a decade. The staff of Truth and Justice Radio speak truth to power every Sunday morning from like 6 till 10 or so. Stan Robinson, Steve Corney, Martin Volker, and the late Sharif Pham have kept Truth and Justice Radio alive. Since Sharif's passing, others have stepped up to continue the reporting on This Week in Palestine, which is part of the program each week. The Community Church of Boston will be honoring Truth and Justice Radio with the 2011 Sacco and Vanzetti Social Justice Award this Sunday morning, starting at noon and followed by a community luncheon. All are welcome. Congratulations from us here at WMBR to our friends and comrades at Truth and Justice Radio. You can hear them every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. over there on 90.3, but maybe not this Sunday because they'll be at the... I bet they'll be on the air and then they'll head on over. And you can, too. Community Church is located in Copley Square. Visit communitychurchofboston.org for more information. And now we're fully out of time. The views and opinions we've been espousing on this program this evening are those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Human beings and their music are coming up shortly. Please stay cool. Till then, we'll be back next week. Peace.
Bun Fee Music for Human. Ah, sing with me, my whale. I'm a Dr. Janis Sakran, and I welcome you. Feeling very emotionally stable today, and I hope you are as well. We have with us Erno. Erno, marhaban.
Hello, doctor. I greet you on this most stable day.
I greet you also with warmth, Erno.
And I greet you with fire, doctor. Warmer than warmth. For my excitement for this afternoon knows no bounds. You seem so excited that it's making you thirsty.
This is the case. Let us also welcome Aurora. Aurora, marhaban.
Thank you for your welcome. On such a lovely day, though stability may be horrible for some, for myself today I have found a stability of happiness and elation. Perhaps for others, the stability of misery. And for those people, I offer my commiseration.
I think for those people, we travel on the 16-dimensional axis of personality. Mm-hmm. And one of these axes is stability. And through this experience, it is important to act as a mirror for others.
Particularly on today. It is Friday the 13th. And many assign special significance to the day. So whether or not the day is actually significant, if it is so in the minds, then it is so in reality.
Well, to analyze this for us, we welcome Zoro. Zoro, marhaban.
Thank you, doctor. Thank you, of course, to all the listeners out there who are listening in as well. It is this Friday, the 13th, but I think it is a good day. I have been outside today, and it has been good to me.
Yes, I believe that. Tradition mistakenly labels Friday the 13th as a day of lack of luck.
Yes, I have heard that there are many buildings in which there is no 13th floor, but I have researched this in some depth, and I found that most buildings do not even go to 12, and so it is not really the superstition, I think, which is in charge of this problem.
I feel that on a day such as Friday the 13th, I should be rocked with turmoil and confusion, but I am not. Today I look upon my soul, and it feels like a decommissioned battleship. It has been through hard times in the past, rocky seas, it's weathered storms, but now it sits peacefully in the harbor.
And which harbor does it sit in?
Yes, I think there are two principal arbors in this situation. There is the arbor of the mind and the arbor of the art.
I like to think my soul sits in the harbor of the mind.
I think that if you must say for today, I will say that my soul sits in the art.
I believe that one harbor cushions the other, for I find myself experiencing great relaxation throughout my body, a physical relaxation, which I believe translates to mental lucidity.
Yes, yes, I think to put the metaphor a little further, the arbors are in the same bay.
One facing the other. For when there is turmoil and strong waves in one, they lap upon the other.
Friday, I think, has been regarded traditionally alone by some as an unlucky day. I'm not clear as to why this is the case. I think that it differs from one culture to another. In particular, in my culture, the Friday is the holy day. So I think that the West came to regard it negatively due to the friction between the two cultures. Similarly, the number 13 is regarded as a lucky number in certain South Asian cultures.
That is interesting. I think that the day name, which we have Friday, I think it comes from the Norse god Freya. The god, I believe, of the hearth and harvest also. I am not an expert on these matters, but it seems to me that this is not an unlucky god to have.
Yes, I've never found that the 13th day of the month is particularly unlucky. On the contrary, I have found that these days, these Friday the 13th, are very fruitful days, and whether that fruit is lush and delicious or rotten on the inside, it's only for the future to tell.
Yes, yes, I think that we must more beware the Ides of a month. I think that for famous reasons we must worry not about the 13th, but the 14th, the 15th.
I wonder if anyone knows what phase the moon is currently.
On my walk over here this afternoon, I happened to notice that it was, how do you say, a half moon?
I believe that is how you say it.
Sometimes I forget. They have names for the other shapes.
The gibbous.
The gibbous, the 1/8 moon, is called the crescent. Mm.
Indeed, Aurora, the moon currently...
I guess the 1/4 moon would also be a crescent.
Indeed, it is 83% gibbous waxing.
That I do not understand.
This corresponds very well with the harvest. Do you know if it is growing or shrinking?
The moon or the harvest?
The moon.
I think it is waxing.
It
is waxing. Which means it is getting larger.
Yeah, it is.
Or at the very least, shinier.
I think that the actual moon, though, is not getting larger. It is just the apparent image in the sky, the part of the moon which we may see. But again, I'm not sure. I'm not an expert.
But how can we know if the rest of the moon is there if we cannot see it?
Truly, the mind has such wonderful powers. If we look and perceive the shape of the moon, is that not so the reality within ourselves? For is not the universe merely our perception and projection?
Yes, sometimes I wonder if the whole world, all of the universe exists only within our minds.
Yes, I think it is certainly true that the way we perceive things is more real, in a sense, than anything external to us. That is to say, the delineation between, say, objects or concepts, it does not exist. It is your delineation.
But then how do you reconcile the fact that other people are indeed conscious and aware?
Well, I think perhaps that it just goes to show that there is this objectivity and that you must reach communication in order to have agreement.
I am not saying that the world does not physically exist, but that the importance within one's mind is how one perceives the world. If one perceives the world as a terrible place, then the world will be terrible to them. If one perceives the world with hope and think that the other people around them will be kind and cherishing, then that will happen as well. And I have noticed this, that the projections, the assumptions that we make, turn into reality.
So there is some sort of a feedback where the ripples, the feelings, the thoughts which you project outwards, they come back to you. And as you create a reality, it creates that reality for yourself. Mm.
And in turn, that reality shapes you.
Exactly. One altering the other, which is why I've always believed that folded within ourselves is the universe itself, just as folded outward from us is ourselves.
I like this metaphor.
Perhaps we are less our bodies and our skins, and more the trees and the air around us. Are they not more important in determining who we are and how we're remembered? When you think about it, our physical form really has very little to do with ourselves, our person.
You bring an interesting point, particularly looking at the other organisms, the other experiments, if you will, of nature. I've always found that, given how similar we are to all the creatures around us, particularly similar to one another, it brings us so much closer to the earth.
Yeah, I would like to talk briefly about the five loci and where we find ourselves on the five dimensions, the five loci out of the 16 dimensions of personality. Are you familiar with the loci?
I do not believe that I am. I have heard of the concept, but perhaps you may elaborate or something of this kind.
I am also unaware, Doctor, and would love to be refreshed.
Yeah, and in any case, perhaps our listeners are unfamiliar. The five loci are five major dimensions of living, of existence. The five are these: openness, conscientiousness, extraversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. So each dimension has a positive and negative pole. Mm-hmm. So let's go through the loci one by one, by one, by one, by one.
I think less one. There are five.
There
you
are
said
five.
Six.
Well, the final locus will be each other. So the first locus is openness. The two poles, the positive and negative, or the upper and lower pole,
so,
are inventiveness and curiosity, contrary to consistency and cautiousness.
This is interesting. It definitely strikes a very nice notion to say. And I think even that it is not fair to call one pole negative and one pole positive, even though there is a sense of opposite. You can see the attraction of either way, you know. To be more organized, you may be more productive.
Oh, absolutely.
But if you are spontaneous, creative, perhaps you may take longer steps than someone else.
No, I would like to say that I say positive and negative, as a mathematician would say them, simply indicating oppositeness and not a sense of quality in some other way. Secondly, I would like to say that there is no judgment. And also, thirdly, that I feel like it is not a static thing, that it is not not a judgment, that it is not that one may simply be cautious extremely, and this is a fixed constant of the personality we describe. But let us say, for the moment, where do we find ourselves on this locus?
I personally find myself today in a very stable place.
Mm.
So perhaps on the, what would you say, negative pole?
So you are on the consistent, cautious pole.
Perhaps not cautious, but I do not find myself looking outwards with curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Or intensity, I find myself laying.
Now, I'd like also to say that I say locus because it is not a line, it is not dimension, that there are spectra here, and it is a broad stroke to describe a person's state. So it is fine that we do not lie on the extremes in each way.
Mm.
And if we wish to analyze more deeply, we will focus on the 16 dimensions. Erno, tell us, do you find yourself inventive and curious, or consistent, cautious?
I'd have to say that I consider myself to be a fairly consistent person.
In general also, or merely at the moment, you are experiencing a brief moment of consistency?
At the moment, I am consistent, but I am known to be spontaneous at times, but not consistently spontaneous.
Intriguing. Zoro.
Perhaps you may read again the pose.
Yes, absolutely. We are discussing the first locus. Openness. Do you find yourself inventive and curious, or consistent and cautious?
I think that it is fair for me to call myself curious, although inventive, perhaps not. So I will sway to the curious side of the pole.
I think also that at the moment, I myself am somewhat curious.
And what,
somewhat inventive.
What troubles your mind? Are there any particular curiosities at the moment?
Yeah, I do not feel troubled and curious, vexed, pestered, annoyed. No. I am simply open at the moment, open to all of the strange experiences which are here, ready to be sampled
I think that I am curious to hear, if we may, from some of the listeners out there. Perhaps, if you like, you may call in. The number, if I am correct, is 617-253-8810, and we have two lines available.
Indeed, you show mastery in your expertise. But see, even among the four of us, we find the full spectrum of openness.
In fact, it is true.
Let's take a caller. Caller, marhaban.
Yes, hello, thank you.
Thank you, caller, welcome.
Yes, so actually, if I may step back a little bit onto what you've been saying, I would like to talk about really what, when you really dig it down, what you think is the difference between one being like a human and say something else, such as a dog.
That's an excellent question, caller. And the real importance of this question is, when do you call someone human? What is the cutoff? Because we all have different variations. We're all different people. We have this beautiful spectrum of personality brought up by our host. And
yes, it is very confusing. Like, really, when you break it down, not physically, but just mentally, really, and also, like you said, that humans and dogs, we all have a head, we all have four legs, may two of them be considered arms for humans.
Yes, I think I understand. I think in this situation, actually, I disambiguate by using two different words. There is the word human and there is the word person. And I think that a person is a being which may think and consider to some level. And that a human is more of a clear definition of a species.
Let's bring a second voice in to join, perhaps with some answers. Caller 2, marhaban.
Hello?
Welcome, caller, welcome.
Yes, I have a question about the last caller who was just on there talking about the animals.
Still with you.
Yes.
My question is that, do you think that, like, the whole reincarnation thing, that, like, animals, like, people who died who were bad are, like, criminals, that when they were reincarnated, that they weren't good enough to be human, so that God made them animals? Do you believe that, or do you believe that they're just separate species on this earth?
Well, I kind of believe that even if you were good, you could still be reincarnated into an animal. It's not necessarily a punishment, but it could be a punishment in some form. Say, like, a good person could be reincarnated into, say, an animal that got to run free for its life, be happy. And, say, a criminal, or, like, a murderer or something, could be maybe, say, reincarnated into, like, a gnat. Or something. No, really would have a story.
Hold on. My question is, like, okay, since you say that, do you believe that it depends on how bad you were to what kind of animal you become? Do you think that, like, if you were a criminal, you become, like, a bad animal? Or, like, an animal that, like, a snail or, like, a fish or something that people don't really talk too much? And, like, if you're good, you become, like, a lion or a tiger or a dog. Like, what do you believe?
Let me interject here. I believe that the importance is not the species, but the quality of life of the individual. I believe the universe has a greater perception of time and the span of each individual creature. And if you were to be reincarnated as a punishment, you could even be a king who ends up murdering himself and his daughter and wife.
So to Aurora and Caller 1, the issue is the quality of life and not the nature of life. So it is better to be a tree and be happy than to be the most venerated guru and suffering the pain in the universe. I understand this view, and it also neatly steps around the issues, caller one, that you bring up. Because for me, you know, when you say what is the difference between a dog and a human, how can one positively identify a person as being one or the other?
Yeah.
And I remember a debate that I had with a colleague about the difference between plants and animals, which is an even coarser difference.
Yeah.
and yet it is a difficult line to draw. One, my opponent argued, was the possibility that a plant may be identified by the speed of his reflexes. I threw a ball at him, it hit him in the beard. And he said, I said, are you a plant, my friend? Because you have the reflexes of an artichoke. And this ended the argument there. But this issue is not settled in my mind.
Yes, you know, I understand. Because, I mean, plants and animals, they both live, they both die, and they both work, and they both breathe. So really, when you bring it down to that, it is very, very hard to draw a line.
Mm.
I tend to agree with the caller as well, and I think trying to draw many of these lines can be a slippery slope. For instance, if you draw a line between humans and dogs, and then dogs and chickens, what stops you from drawing the line between one human and another? Between,
well, if you think about it, all animals and humans are basically the same, just in different forms. They both communicate different ways. They all walk different ways. I mean, they even try to communicate to us. Like, my dog talks back to me when I tell him to do something. He'll growl, or he'll like go lay down and he'll make a noise.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not so different, the animals are, than we
exactly.
are.
Exactly.
Which is what made me think that maybe, you know, maybe they were humans at one time.
That's
what
very
do we think
true.
Alike?
That I agree with that very much now.
Yeah, in a very real biological way, we are all members of the same process. Some ancient spirit that entered the carbon and allowed it to reproduce and became divided into all of us, dogs and also people, even the people who are dogs.
And this is beautiful because this idea brings a single spirit and entity.
I got it.
And allows it to divide infinitely, infinitesimally, to a bunch of beautiful single spirit part wholes which interact with one another.
So, and callers, I would like to ask, on the openness spectrum, where do you find yourselves on this evening? Do you find yourselves inventive and curious, or consistent and cautious? Caller one, please.
Oh, I'm really consistent. Definitely consistent.
Consistency and cautiousness. And the other caller one.
Yes. Well, I do find myself rather curious tonight. That is why I brought up the question about the differences between animals and humans, or whether, but really now I believe that humans are just another form of an animal. We're all animals in one way.
And aren't animals just plants?
Exactly.
They're plants that can move and have heads and limbs.
And then, again, there are plants that can move, like, say, it being a spider.
And we can even find affinity to the stone melting slowly in a puddle of water. For is that not where we came from?
Indeed, the caller makes the great point about the Venus flytrap, but even the oak or the rose moves, though slowly.
And if you meditate with your back to a tree, allow yourself to grasp the grass between your fingers and feel yourself uniting and drinking the spirit and energy of the earth with your fingers and your limbs, you can feel the great presence of the tree.
Mm.
I remember in our conversation last week on this program, we had a debate about whether a chicken fell on the animal or plant side of this arbitrary line, and we really could not come to a conclusion. After the program, I argued with Zorro at some length, and we came to the conclusion that a chicken could live without its head, so it must be a plant. But perhaps this line isn't really there. Perhaps this animal or plant, whatever you call it, just inhabits some interior region between the animal and plant world.
I think perhaps you may call it a planimal. I think that is a good word.
Or an anaplant.
No, I think planimal is very, very aesthetically pleasing.
I prefer anaplant, but...
No, planimal.
I also prefer anaplant. I feel it is just...
Well, I suppose you are entitled to your opinion.
You know, the other point about segmenting the animal is an interesting one, because a plant cannot live without certain portions of itself. Likewise, a person...
But everything really needs certain resources to live. So really, again, just another ugly thing.
But cannot the earthworm grow from pieces of itself?
Absolutely. Aurora makes the point about earthworms, or also the starfish, which from which each segment will grow into another starfish.
Yes, great examples of anaplants.
Let us continue examining our loci. I would like us, those of us who are finding ourselves extremely inventive, to try to slow down, to be cautious, and to be consistent. Likewise, those who are cautious, please open the mind so that we may find ourselves seated together.
So you advocate a principle of balance and neutralness?
Only for the sake of the mutual exploration. So we continue. The second locus, conscientiousness. Do we find ourselves efficient and organized, or easygoing, relaxed, careless?
You know, I feel like there could be a line in between the two sides of the second locus. Like, no one says you have to be entirely calm and collected, or entirely curious and inventive. You could be somewhere in between. There are many combinations of the two feelings.
Which is indeed why we say that we have 16 dimensions. In a dimension, each dimension allows a full spectrum.
But we are only now discussing the five loci, the broad brushstrokes that describe our current state. So, conscientiousness. Erno.
I consider myself to be fairly efficient, but in a carefree way. I tend to do it without trying.
So, yeah, that's what I'm... been saying, that you happen to be at one of those points in the middle.
But actually, Erno, the meaning of the locus is that your behavior is spontaneous or planned. So you are describing incidental efficiency, spontaneity, acting dutifully without an effort to do so.
I tend to make plans, but I make them very spontaneously. I'm one to plan about an event 10 minutes before it starts, rather than 2 days before.
Beautiful. So...
But I don't think I fall quite in the middle. The middle would suggest that I am slightly efficient and I care somewhat. I am very efficient, but I don't care at all. So I don't think I fall in the middle. Perhaps so. I fall, half of me falls on the top and half on the bottom. There is a distinction.
A dark lightness or
that,
a light darkness.
That is an interesting image.
Aurora.
Yes, I find that throughout today I have been more planned, more organized. But at this moment, in this state with all of you, I find myself releasing my worries and being... very easy, just going with the river.
I love this movement, the clarifying this idea that the locus is not a fixed thing. It is not a constant of Aurora. Zoro.
I think after some meditation, I have come to the conclusion, which is to say that I am not efficient, and so I must, in this vein, be easygoing.
Mm.
I myself,
I find myself today to be uncharacteristically self-disciplined and organized, efficient.
You know, I personally think that I do believe in overthinking, and that overthinking can really lead to much worse ideas than that you can get spontaneously. But I am not saying that you can't get a good idea from thinking it through. But there definitely should be a boundary in how far you think before you've begun to overthink.
And I definitely agree with this. This is actually a very important point. A lot of women, when they are suffering from grief or suffering from some circumstance, tend to dwell on it with the idea that if they think it through and relive the emotion and feel it enough times, that they will feel better. But it is found that oftentimes the male approach to grief, which is to ignore it, often allows for a faster recovery.
And you are using, again, the terms male and female, not with their traditional connotations, but simply as a mathematician would.
Exactly.
Indicating opposite states.
Opposite polarities.
Mm. Well, let us invite some of our callers, some of our listeners, to join us. Tell us if you are easygoing and laid back, relaxed, or...
efficient, I believe.
The other.
Efficient is the other end of the spectrum.
Disciplined and numerical, careful, organized. The number is 617-253-8810.
And if I may interject here, I really love this beautiful, booming, drum-like percussion.
I believe, in fact, it is a drum of some sort.
May I ask what we are listening to?
We are listening to... yes, we are listening to Stefania's song, which is described here on the album as a drum-like thing here.
And that description.
Mm, gentle and deep.
Yes.
Yeah. Should we continue to explore ourselves with the loci?
Yes, indeed. I believe I'm learning very much about my own personality and yours as well.
It is actually quite a wonderful thing to sit and think through the five loci every once in a while, to understand the map before you lie in the moment.
You know, I've wondered how many locusts are there, because I'm very, very interested in these.
In the loci, or the locust,
there are many of those.
A lot of locusts, there are only five loci.
Of course, I believe the loci only come around every 7 years. Or is it 14?
That is the locust, I believe.
I'm getting
only
confused.
A particular type of locust.
But there are other views, of course. The five loci is a traditional a traditional angle on which you may cut the person and then imagine their personality. But I think it is possible for you to conceive of some different cut to make and to examine a personality, to come up with, any number of loci from 3 to 8 or perhaps more.
In traditional cultures, often talking about the periodic movement, it is suggested that every 12 years, when the house of the stars of your birth lie aligned with Saturn, an opportunity exists to move from one locus to another. Hence, I think the myth that the locust returns every 19 years.
That indeed follows. It's very interesting.
So we continue. The third locus is extraversion.
You know, I'm wondering, what culture do these theories on the loci and the different representations, what culture is this from?
Well, you know, various versions of this exist in many cultures, both Eastern and Western. This has recently achieved support in the psychological fields here, in psycho-spiritualism. The idea of the five loci was published. It is considered a data-driven research finding. So, but it is traditional also from the gurus to the mandarins and as far north as cold places.
Thank you.
Yeah, but the work of Digman is one that you may find relevant if you are interested in the Western end.
And so this loci, this locus, it is extraversion. What are the poles of this locus?
So the two poles are being outgoing and energetic, extroverted, contrasted with being solitary, reserved, and introverted.
I think for me, this is a clear one to answer, that I am more on the solitary end of the spectrum.
In general or only in the moment?
I think that this is, it is true in general. Of course, at the moment, I am here with you on the radio, and so it is not particularly true, but on the whole, I imagine myself, I am very much of a solitary kind of person.
But see, even though you are present here, you may not be seeking stimulation from the company, much as the chair on which you sit.
Yes, yes, I think I can agree. And the chair, if it may speak, might agree as well.
Aurora, where do you find yourself?
This is actually a locus on which I oscillate very wildly. I find at some periods of my life that I am very deeply introspective and that I explore very deeply within myself. And yet I find a difficult time saying that this is just an inward exploration, because I feel like exploring within oneself is to explore the entirety of the universe. And in contrary, or perhaps contrary is the wrong word, but to explore outwards, also to understand more about oneself.
So, Aurora, you have explored within yourself so deeply that you have found yourself exploring the whole.
So I myself find that I very much enjoy the company of others. Like, I would enjoy this conversation much more if, say, I was with you in the room. I prefer the values of face-to-face conversations more than just talking on a phone as we are right now. Though I do still enjoy it. I do still enjoy this.
I have to disagree. For this locus is extremely clear for me. I tend to be a solitary person. There are many, many times when I want to forego the attention of others and live in my solitude with my meditations and my potions.
There are sometimes when being solitary, I do find that too, but in the majority of times, I enjoy the company of others.
I find myself very extreme on this axis, feeling either an extreme desire for company and companionship, alternating with an isolation like an iceberg.
So you find perhaps to say that at first you are cold, but then there is too much heat.
Yes, I find occasionally that I am the valley, and occasionally that I am the Jarlsberg.
Yes.
Perhaps you are a rock or an island.
No man is an island.
Well, should we continue? We have such a short time to explore the final two loci.
I suppose that we shall. Tell me, what is the next?
The fourth locus, completing the anagram ocean, is agreeableness. Are you friendly and compassionate? Are you cold and unkind?
I believe most of us here are friendly and compassionate.
But occasionally skeptical, suspicious, even antagonistic.
I think that if I imagine the whole human race, I am hoping that it is more on the friendly side of things, relative to this average, I am imagining that I am not quite as warm, and that I am friendly, but there are times at which I remain skeptical.
I do feel that, again, for the fourth loci, I would be somewhere, like, very close to the... Well, I would be, like, say, three quarters. There would be a quarter of the spectrum in between me and the compassionateness and the company of others. Because there is just a small amount of time, really, I do... Again, just feel that
I would
enjoy
being solitary.
Yes, better.
Yes, so once again, it is important, I think, to explore fully the locus.
You wanted chili and pepperoni, right?
Let us continue then to the final locus with our remaining minute. Neuroticism. Are you sensitive and nervous? Are you secure and confident? Erno, briefly.
I'm not sure. I hope I don't come off as neurotic.
No, but are you? Are you? You come to yourself and say, I, Erno.
It is not an accusation. You may freely answer.
Okay, I was worried for a second. No, I don't consider myself neurotic in the least.
You do come across a little...
Well, you did put me on the spot.
Aurora.
I have worked hard to build the confidence that I have now, but I would like to believe that I am sensitive to others, which is important in my line of work.
And Zoro.
I have found that I was born a quite neurotic person, but over time I have learned and I have become more confident. I am probably in the middle of the spectrum at this time.
Yeah, beautiful answer. Connor.
Yes, so I also feel that I am semi in the middle of the spectrum. I'm kind of, could I be reassured of what specifically you mean by neurotic?
Yeah, you know, neuroticism, once again, is considered negative, but it also reflects a sensitivity, the possibility of change, attentiveness.
The ability, I think, to resonate with the things around you.
And to some extent, a tendency to experience emotions, even those which are unpleasant. So there is a fullness in the spectrum.
And I feel like I would be slightly closer to neurotic than not.
Yeah, also I tend towards vulnerability, sensitivity, neuroticism, but only inwardly.
Yes, I can see it in your eyes.
Well, unfortunately, all completing now the five loci ocean with the beautiful ocean music in the background, we must say goodbye. So, caller, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Erno.
Thank you for having me, Doctor. And remember, it is spring, and outside there may be locusts. Take care, they do not bite you.
Aurora, thank you.
Again, it is my pleasure. Namaste.
Zoro.
Yes, thank you, Doctor, for having me. And thank you, of course, to all the listeners out there as well. I'm very, very sorry to those of you who we could not get to.
I am Addictor Jalis Sakran, here on Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age talk radio with an emphasis on you. We are here every Friday at 7 p.m. on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Ma'asalama.
Safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
The views and opinions presented on this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. This is Terror Boys. WMBR, Cambridge, 88.1 FM.
Greetings, Planet Earth. My name is Maria Cassidy,